Hey, thanks for joining us today. Man, you're not going to want to miss this podcast. We're going to continue talking about the spirit of Ishtar in our culture today. She was the sacred prostitute. She was the seducer, the one who would allure her followers into all kinds of sexual expression and sexual worship. And we're talking about basically the pornification of American culture today, where sex has been removed from the sacred confines of marriage. It's been monetized. It's been used to create wealth. And we're going to talk about some of that. And it should come as no surprise that Baal comes and erases all the lines. And once the lines are erased, those lines include lines of proper sexuality. And so it should come as no surprise that we saw a sexual revolution that took place in America after an open rejection of God and his laws. We're going to talk about the connection between those two things in our podcast today. You're not going to want to miss it.
Welcome to the Ron Johnson Discipleship Podcast.
Thanks again, everybody, for joining the party. We're glad that you guys are here. Glad that you're listening in. Thanks for the feedback that you continually give us. And we are on our way working through an amazing book by Jonathan Cahn called The Return of the Gods. It's been eye-opening, huh? You and I were just talking. We're gonna start recording the pre-podcast because there's a lot of good content that doesn't even make this podcast when we're just, you know, pontificating about life.
Well, we were talking about how the exposure of corruption and no one's really doing anything about it.
Yes, right? There's good news and bad news.
Yeah.
Lots of corrupt politicians have a rap sheet a mile long, at least as far as evidence. If we could get anybody actually tried and sent off to Sing Sing, that would be good. Mm-hmm. We need to get some convictions here, and I'm praying for justice to be done, but my goodness, it just gets deeper and deeper, the mess that we're in. And then you were kind of tying this into feeling a little bit sheltered because we're talking about the second member of the Dark Trinity in Jonathan Cahn's book, which is Ashtoreth or Ishtar. She goes by lots of names, same demon principality, but lots of names. But just kind of realizing that we live here in Indiana, which is a great place to live and raise kids, but we're pretty sheltered in terms of the growing darkness as it relates to just perversion and wickedness, not only in America, but in the nations of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, reading this chapter, realize the undercurrent of greed and lust in our nation that I'm not really aware of that much. Personally, I'm pretty sheltered. And I was saying, I got young kids, so yeah. It's very intentional that we stay off those things in our television
screens.
You're not
watching TV and all that kind of stuff. You're busy raising your family.
Yeah, even on social media, we're very guarded. And that's where a lot of that exposure is, right?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. You know, it's interesting. We're saying Jonathan Cahn, at least for me, helped give me a template for understanding the rapid decline of America, and how, you know, when we talk about how quickly things happen, it's not just the gradual erosion of morals or whatever. It's like rapid decline, which makes you wonder what's behind all of this. And what he's pointing out is that we're kind of forgetting the whole spiritual warfare dynamic, that there are demonic principalities and powers who are ancient. They're not new. They're ancient. They're being revived in America, and they're explaining how a whole country, not just individuals, but a whole nation can live under a demonic deception. And so we started off with Baal, who's a familiar character in the Bible, an ancient demonic principality. And, you know, Baal's job was to lead a nation into apostasy. So where there was once people that loved God, that made a covenant with God, that existed to reveal the glory of God, who submitted themselves there at Sinai, submitted themselves to the law of God. We're going to follow you, Lord. You know, we'll never turn our backs on you. I mean, this was a covenant that was made at Sinai that parallels the American experience here. And then you watch the gradual erasing of those lines by Baal. to where the people end up rejecting the law of God, rejecting God himself, wanting nothing to do with him, and committing spiritual apostasy, which was lawlessness. And you know, it should come as no surprise, if you can convince people that God's laws are no longer applicable for today, then certainly the next step is, well, those same laws that speak to our sexuality, those laws must be irrelevant to us today. And so you start with the general law of God, and then you move into the specific expression, and now you start erasing, you know, boundaries that God has placed around our the expression of our sexuality. And it should come as no surprise that on the heels of Baal comes this second member of the dark trinity, Ashtoreth or Ishtar, because one literally leads to the next.
Yeah, it's a powerful strategy. And this has been the undercurrent in America for decades. And you know how the principle of the boiling of water is, you know, at 99 degrees, even though the temperature is rising, you don't see the effect until it hits 100. Then all of a sudden it starts boiling. It's the same thing in America, I feel like. It's like all the stuff that's happening on behind the scenes with Baal and Ishtar, with greed and lust, and then the last decade or so, that's when it started bubbling to the surface and we see this rapid decline. But it wasn't rapid. It's the infrastructure has been worked in over decades and decades. You know?
And you brought out a good point that we need to mention by way of connecting the podcast from last week to this week. In addition to apostasy, you know, Baal was the god, as you pointed out, of a blessing, prosperity, you know, the crops, the god of fertility. And so when you start with greed and money and a lust for more and a lust for riches and a lust for success, whatever worldly success is measured, a lust for materialism, having more things, more stuff, more comforts. And then you combine that with kind of sexual license, then you get an idea about what we're going to talk about today. So let's pick up the chapter in the Return of the Gods book is called The Sacred Prostitute. And Jonathan Cahn points out that Ishtar was the patron goddess of the prostitutes. And so prostitutes would look to her as their model. They would pray to her. They would seek her blessing. She was like their patron saint, so to speak, although she wasn't a saint. But they worshiped her, and they prostitutes saw themselves as the servants of Ishtar. And so prostitution became part of her worship, part of her cult. And we see this all throughout, you know, the ancient times, temple prostitution. In fact, even up to recent times, there were certain missionaries that, for instance, would go to India where there were still children who were used in temple worship as temple prostitutes. Her sexual acts attended her worship and rituals and could be found in her sanctuary. So she was the harlot goddess. She was the role model and the great benefactor of the prostitutes. Her obsession with sexuality, her promiscuity, her countless relationships and lovers, all of these served as examples for the ancient Middle Eastern prostitutes. So again, Ishtar was not faithful. She was, as we mentioned her personality in weeks past, she was impetuous, she was violent, she was vindictive, she was lustful, she was a seductress, temptress, and all of these characteristics, again, were worshipped and celebrated by prostitutes. So they look to emulate her as their role model. And so the question and the thing I like about Jonathan Cahn, he says, okay, how did Israel fall? And then since America is very similar to Israel as a nation, how is it that we fell? And so he makes the connection between the sexualization of American culture that's really the return of Ishtar, the prostitute goddess. And he makes this point, prostitution takes sexual relations out of the exclusive context of husband and wife and brings them into the larger culture, into the marketplace, into the realm of trade and commerce. So let's talk about that for just a little bit. First of all, the sacred covenant of marriage. What was the law of God regarding the expression of sexuality? What's the proper context?
In the context of marriage, that they become one flesh. That was instituted even before the fall between Adam and Eve.
All right. So you go all the way back. For instance, I'm reading here Hebrews 13, verse 4. Let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. So, you know, here we have a very strong word from the Lord in Scripture. The marriage bed is holy. So sexual relations between a man and woman who are in covenant is holy. It's a good thing. It's a blessed thing. But when you remove it, God says, for the sexually immoral person or the adulterer, that there's judgment. That should put the fear of God in us. God says, I personally will judge those people who defile the marriage bed. So it should come as no surprise that, first of all, Baal attacks marriage, and we've seen this in the redefinition of marriage, if there's such a thing. So he goes after marriage, and he seeks to take what was beautiful and personal and private and to be enjoyed between a man and a woman, that sexual playground of marriage, which again is good and God bless. He seeks to tear down the walls and take something that was very private and make it very public. And so we've seen that happen rapidly in America, where American culture and Western civ has been sexualized. The marriage bed has been, sex has been stolen from the marriage bed. Sexuality is now everywhere and unbridled by the marriage covenant. And here's the big point. It becomes a commodity. So we've seen sex become something that is marketed, something that is monetized, something, again, taken out of the privacy of marriage and become very public in terms of expression, mm-hmm. and become massive part of our economic picture in American culture as the sexualization of our culture has occurred. The monetization of sex has skyrocketed in America.
Which is very interesting because, you know, growing up, you think like monetization of prostitutions and sexualization has always seemed like a seedy kind of thing, right. Underlying thing. And today is super prominent in a way that I could never imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And acceptable in the minds of so
many people. The mainstream is very mainstream.
Because it goes like this, you know, well, who are you to tell me how to use my body? And if I can use my body to make money, and then now we're talking about, well, everybody's strapped for money. In fact, what you're seeing in the news is these, for instance, school teachers who you would think, you know, oh, there's my elementary kid's school teacher. She's such a sweet lady. She's got an OnlyFans account where she's producing basically pornographic content or at the least risque content. And now school boards are going, wait a minute, Mrs. So-and-so, who teaches third grade, has a porn account, an OnlyFans account, and she just made $1 million last year to supplement her mm-hmm. teacher's salary that wasn't quite paying all the bills. And some of these teachers are being fired because of that, which I think is great, because we still show some, you know, that maybe my kid's kindergarten teacher shouldn't be a porn star. But I don't know how long that's going to last. Sure. Because again, we've thrown the standard out. Baal destroyed the standard. But this is interesting, a little background here, talking about, this is an article called OnlyFans Emerges as Cultural Phenomenon, with everyone from teachers to celebs profiting off risque content. It says, OnlyFans customers pay for access to, quote, exclusive content they won't find on other social media platforms. It has drawn attention as it's frequently sexual in nature and features everything from nude images and pornographic videos to scantily clad women cooking and doing yoga. And here's the connection I'm wanting to make between Ishtar and what we're seeing in our culture today. The article says there's a common motivating factor for many content creators: money. And man, we're talking about massive money. I want to highlight some of this. There's one lady who rose to fame after appearing on the Dr. Phil show. She said that her post suggested she earned over $38 million in less than a year.
Wow.
$38 million. More than 3 million creators are now on OnlyFans. So here's the sad thing. We're talking about our normal, you know, daughters, girls. You have to be over 18, but we're talking about young women who are basically turning them, so we call them content creators, which is a euphemistic title for what we would normally would call prostitutes. So we have the prostituting of our culture in America, where 230 million people are subscribing, quote, fans, a global audience two-thirds the size of the United States itself, which is massive. Payouts to creators soared last year to $5.5 billion, which is more than every online influencer in the United States earned from advertisers last year. And they said if OnlyFans creator earnings were taken as a whole, the company would rank 90 on the Forbes list of biggest private companies in America by revenue, which is crazy.
Those numbers are astounding to me. I have no clue that that's that big of an industry.
And that's just a segment. Yeah. We're not even talking about the entire porn industry. And here's the tragedy. Just as Israel was raised up, you know, by the Lord to reflect his glory and to be a model of the blessing of what a nation would look like that honors God and follows his laws, America was raised up for the same purpose. And to think that we were once the greatest exporter of missionaries and the gospel and the preaching of the word and the printing of Bibles. And now America, talking about the pornification of a country and the rise of Ishtar, we are now the world's largest exporter of pornography, which again is tragic when you think about this takeover that's happened, again, in the last 100 years or so in America. Adult magazines, adult clubs, adult movies, adult entertainment increased in numbers and influence. One no longer had to venture into the corners and shadows of American life. The shadows were overtaking America. And just like you mentioned years ago, you know, people used to have to sneak around to find pornographic material. Now it has become absolutely mainstream. And you can sit and become an OnlyFans member and watch pornography on your phone for $4.99 a month and choose whoever it is that you want to follow, you know, like a baseball player, you know, your favorite baseball player, your favorite football star or whatever. So he makes an interesting connection here, Jonathan Kahn, having to do with the word erotic. You want to talk about that a little bit? Where's this? Because now we've got erotic is everywhere.
Right.
We have erotic literature, erotic dancing, erotic movies, erotic. Erotic has become a very mainstream word. But there's a connection between this second member of the Dark Trinity.
Yeah, it was interesting. Erotic. The word erotic comes from the god Eros, who was the son of Aphrodite, and he was the god of sexual desire and love. Again, there's that word love that yep. once gets very confusing because we use the word love, but we look at those like that's not love. That's not the love we right. see. We right. identify. We define it as love. You know, it's that erotic love.
So behind is Eros uh-huh. is Ishtar, yeah. and that's the connection again. Same demonic spirit finding expression in a word now that's become mainstream. But this goes back to the Greek incarnation of Ishtar.
Yeah.
And of course, this is where we get our idea of pornography. Images of naked women were typical in the pagan culture, especially prominent in the worship of Ishtar. So you can go back, you can look online, you can look up Ishtar or Ashtoreth and look up images, and you will find, you know, carvings in ancient temples and things like that of the goddess. And again, in scantily clad, you know, types of situations carved into stone. And so this is, again, this whole idea of pornographic imagery comes from her. And he says, Khan says, we might expect that the entrance of Ishtar into America and modern culture would bring a revival of naked imagery. And again, when you think about how accustomed we've grown to nudity or semi-nudity, even in like swimsuits, we're basically now beachwear is a woman wearing underwear on the beach or less. Mm-hmm. There used to be much more modesty, at least in terms of beachwear even. Just to be clear, I'm not blaming women in this situation at all. Sometimes you hear that in church, you know, we blame a woman for causing lust in a man. Lust is a man's problem, but I'm just saying we have this everywhere, and you're not even trying to look for it. And if you're a young man who's trying to live with a pure heart before the Lord, or an old man like myself, but especially our young men who are trying to preserve themselves for marriage and those types of things and honor the Lord, it's a tough go because you don't even have to have a bad heart or be seeking it, and you're fighting the nudity everywhere, or just the skin. It might not be total nudity, but it's skin.
Right.
And again, talk about the this is not normal. This is, you go back to say the 1950s. This was nowhere to be found, or you had to go in the dark, seedy, shadowy alleys to find this kind of stuff. But this is a radical transformation in our culture. Again, what Khan calls the pornification of our culture. Let's talk a little bit about Ishtar being the porn goddess. The Greek word for writing is graphos, and the word for prostitution was porne. And so pornography was literally the writings about a prostitute. And again, in those days, it wasn't imagery. There wasn't all the movies and all that, but it was pornographic poetry and things like that, which Khan does not quote in his book, but it says is prevalent in all these temples where they were poetry written in her honor that was very graphic. So it was pornographic writing. And he makes the point, American culture, entertainment, and American-produced internet made pornography ubiquitous. It was everywhere. He says Ishtar had triumphed to where, as I just mentioned, we are now the world's largest producer of pornographic content. He mentions that Ishtar is also the intoxicator. She tempts, she allures, she captivates, she causes her followers to abandon reason and rationality. She seduces, she intoxicates, and he makes a statement, thus it is of note that at the same time that the sexual revolution was taking hold of America, a parallel movement began, an explosion in the usage of intoxicating substances. So, you know, let's talk about this. You move from lawlessness to a pursuit of pleasure, unbridled pleasure, without any kind of restraint or ethics or standards or morality. Then you move into a sexual revolution. And then with the sexual revolution comes another revolution, which was a drug revolution. So in the 60s, you find not only free sex, but everybody's dropping LSD and promoting getting high. In fact, that was celebrated as a form of higher consciousness, right? So if you can escape this world and everything else and achieve a hallucinogenic experience, somehow you're achieving ultimate reality or true reality. And so you got drugs and sex going hand in hand.
It's interesting because you started with like this kind of materialistic sense of like money and power and greed. And then you kind of demystify sex. You take the spiritual element of sex. You say it's just simply about feeling better and feeling good. And then you come full circle back into kind of the spiritual realm again. You're going from like, oh, there's no religion, we don't want anything religious, to the psychedelics that now have all kind of religious languages tied in. And in the day, it's like the religious nature, the spiritual nature of all of this gets revealed. In the day, it's like, it's still about spiritual things.
Well, and remember the principle Khan's operating off of here. You know, you sweep the house clean.
Yeah.
If you don't fill it with something will fill the void. You know, nature abhors a vacuum. You reject God and you're going to look to replace God with something else. And so when unbridled sexuality leaves you feeling kind of hollow, then we add some drugs to it. And maybe those drugs will fill that empty void inside that just raw materialism and hedonism are not satisfying. So let's try drugs. And again, we saw a massive, massive increase in the whole drug culture in America. Even today, look at you think of all the problems that we have to deal with in America. And we have state legislatures that are fighting for the legalization of marijuana as if somehow this is going to solve some problem or this is a big issue to fix or whatever. I just had a visitor who lives in Colorado who says there's hardly any place you can go in Colorado that doesn't reek of marijuana. That's how prevalent it's become out there. And you see these dispensaries on every corner. So here, we're talking about how do you go from where there was like zero drug culture or it was extremely hidden drug culture, say prior to the 1950s, to where the drug culture is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And in our movies, it's even, again, portrayed as being cool. All the cocaine and all the, you have all this wealth and now you're, cocaine is a big part of everybody's life along with everything else. So, again, rapid transformation in our culture. He says here, for the ancient Mesopotamian, the taverns were inhabited by a spirit of Ishtar. It was there that those affected by her allurements were surrounded by three elements: sexuality, intoxicating substances, and now he brings in the third member of that trinity, which is music. When the spirit of Ishtar manifested in American culture in the 1960s, two of the three elements also manifested: sexuality and intoxicating substances. He says the third component would converge as well, which was music. And so we get the phrase drugs, sex, and rock and roll, right? Those three things going together. Much of the music that was written was about drug culture. Again, we could go back and highlight some of the names of songs that were basically veiled, lyrics that were really singing about drugs. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is one that pops into my mind. There were a lot of popular songs that talked about either sexuality, drugs, or both, in their lyrics, and it became just part of that culture. How about the Grateful Dead, concerts and things like that, where there was always, in the music, the audience was mostly high, either intoxicated or strung out on drugs, and the music just flowed out of that. Even the musicians were high. In fact, some of them attribute some of their best music to the spirit that was possessing them while they were playing or while they were creating. In fact, in 1969, a Life magazine article identified the three elements as the counterculture's new sacraments. So now we have a religious, worship connotation, as you pointed out. Sex, drugs, and rock, or sexuality, intoxicating substances, and music, the three elements that characterize Ishtar's dwelling place. So it's interesting. So instead of going to church to worship Jesus, we're going out to an open field to get high, to sleep with somebody, and to basically have a worship experience. It wasn't the worship of the Lord, but it was whatever the latest band was, and that drew the masses together. And even the 60s, a lot of people today celebrate the 60s as a revolutionary time, a great time, a liberating time. And it was a time, again, where Ishtar was probably in her shining glory in terms of American culture. This was interesting. So we've got sex and drugs, and we've got music. And let's talk a little bit about the occult, because that's another thing that we saw happening back in the 60s was a resurgence again of witchcraft. Ishtar herself was a medium. She was the mediator between the gods and mortals. Today, such mediums would be known as fortune tellers, psychics, channelers, and practitioners of the occult. Indeed, all of these elements associated with the goddess would today be categorized under the heading of the occult. She was the occult goddess. And so he says it should come as no surprise that when God's law was attacked, the family was attacked, sex was removed from marriage and monetized. We have unparalleled prosperity in our country in terms of economic, opportunity. We have increased drug use. That the very next thing that's coming, and it kind of points to the point you made, was that something is going to fill this void. And so now we have this incredible interest in the supernatural, witchcraft, fortune telling, and the occult in general. People trying to get in touch with the dead, with the supernatural. It takes lots of different shapes and forms.
Yeah, it's as these spirits gain more mainstream influence, as they become less countercultural and just become cultural, they start to me, it seems like, hey, we don't need to hide as much anymore. We can be more overt. Again, a lot of this came from the material realm, but we all know that, we all know that, but now we know that there's a spiritual element to it. And as they become more and more powerful, to me, it's a little bit like, you dating a guy and he's like, everyone's saying, don't date this guy, but he's like the nicest to you. And then as he gets closer and closer, he becomes more and more comfortable. He sucks you in more and more. He becomes the abuser that he really is. And his true colors are shown. And I feel like that's the cult. That's kind of the progression. It's like as these forces get more dominant, cultural strongholds, they become more overtly spiritual.
Yeah.
And they're showing their true colors.
Yeah. And, you know, I think Romans 1 highlights, you know, when you exchange the truth for a lie, you end up worshiping the creation instead of the creator. And we've highlighted how that's happened. You worship the financial blessing instead of the God who's the source of the blessing. You worship the sun, the moon, the stars, the crops, the land, Mother Nature, right? And so it's interesting today in this whole green movement, it's very much a neo-pagan expression. It's going back to the worship of nature, the worship of spirits, almost the deification of the planet, and then also the absolute silliness that somehow, as human beings, we're going to save, you know, Mother Nature, that we have the power to save Mother Nature. A whole different concept from stewarding. This again is a pagan view where life itself or nature takes on a godlike characteristic. So even when we talk about evolution, it talks about nature has a way of whatever, of evolving, or even the process of evolution is a deification of nature to, I guess, give it a godlike or lifelike quality, yes. Where nature itself has a mind, where nature itself
is intelligent.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. Intelligent. And again, nature is not intelligent. God is intelligent. But whenever we reject God, we deify nature, which means we give it godlike qualities and characteristics. And so there are people today, you see this all over, trying to just go into museums where there's great works of art, and they're throwing glue and paint and gluing themselves. I sit there going, why are we allowing this lawlessness, you know, to happen? We got people gluing themselves to the asphalt, you know, because they're concerned about the climate. Freaking out about the climate. But really, again, it's paganism. It's not a belief in a creator God who's providentially ruling over his creation. It's freaking out, somehow thinking that we have to protect, you know, our patron goddess, you know, Mother Nature. So there's, again, this goddess worship that's coming back, where we reject the one true and living God, and where we worship, you know, again, nature in its place. And we have things like Gaia worship or whatever, where we're worshiping, basically resurrecting old goddesses from the past, which are nothing but demon spirits. So all this stuff is happening right now. We're not becoming more progressive. We're actually regressing. We're going back to the dark ages in terms of our expression of life and our understanding of life. But I think Khan really makes it clear as to why. And in our next podcast, we're going to, as we get into the third member of this dark trinity, we're going to make the connection between materialism and apostasy, between the pornification and sexualization of America. And then what follows on the heels of all of that is just outright violence. And so America is becoming more and more violent. And when we get together next time for our podcast, we're going to tie that third member of the dark trinity in. And I think it will make a full picture as to what we're dealing with and where we're headed if we don't experience revival in America.
And we've already seen that pattern happen in other places.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's already taken place. God help us, may it not happen here. But I do believe, again, the devil overplays his hands. There's nothing satisfying about what he has to offer. And when people have tried all these routes, you try unbridled sexuality, lust, you pursue materialism, you try drugs, you get into all these counterfeits, they leave you empty and usually battered and beat up and broken. And I think that's why a lively church, a Holy Spirit-filled church, a church that exalts Jesus and preaches the gospel and says, thus saith the Lord. I mean, I really believe there's an environment that is being created that's going to lead to a third great awakening in America, and that's my hope. And I'm getting us ready as best as we can as pastors here at Living Stone, getting our congregation ready for what I believe is going to be a massive harvest in the days ahead, because there's nothing satisfying about anything that these three demonic spirits have to offer. So thank you again for tuning in. I hope this is helpful. Please share this podcast with friends who you think might benefit from it. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week as we introduce the third member of the Dark Trinity. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week.